We have seen a rise of conspiracies that people readily treat as fact over recent years. Stray social media posts have replaced outlets of actual journalism as fodder for people's view of the world around them. Challenge these people, you're dismissed as a Nazi, a pedo, or of course with the laughing emoji. So why does this trait spread so quick and wide? My next guest says he's found the root of this problem. It's a problem which he fears will have a long-term impact if not addressed. He does just that with his book, Thinking Critically in College, The Essential Handbook for Student Success. He is the former Dean of Academic Advising and Associate Vice Provost for Undergraduate Education at Stanford University, Dr. Lewis Newman. Thank you so much for being here today, Doctor.
My pleasure.
ThinkingCritically.us is Lewis's website to find out more about his book and this topic overall, because as I said in the intro, sir, certainly seems like, I don't know, I mean, I guess we dismiss the people who treat fantasy as fact as gullible, but in fact, as you write and as you are advocating, it's a serious absence that really needs to be addressed by the centers of what we call them higher learning, but they haven't been teaching everything they need to, apparently.
Right. Well, what I would say, first of all, is that the issue of people being gullible to scams and conspiracy thinking is not a new phenomenon. Right. This has been with us for a very, very long time. What's changed, I think, is that the Internet and the rise in social media have exacerbated this problem and amplified it to the point where people are just so inundated with information, and it's coming from all sorts of sources and not only through mainstream media, where they have a long tradition of very careful vetting of their sources and so on. So in that sense, we're now in a situation where it's a little bit like the Wild West. There's everybody saying everything about everyone and very little policing of anything. Right? So that's number one. Number two, I would say, is that we're living in an age, of course, of increased political polarization, and that in turn amplifies everything considerably. So what I would simply say is that what we need to do to address this, and this is only one element by any estimation of what needs to be done, but we need to be very carefully reinforcing basic critical thinking skills, both in college, of course, and even leading up to college and beyond college on the other end. That is to say, we need to be reminding people over and over the basic principles of checking evidence, thinking about context, looking at alternative explanations for anything they read, and so on, because those are the skills that require one to really think rigorously and carefully about claims that are surrounding us.
Which, to most people, they think, well, that's, I've got that already, but that's not everybody. And when you have someone who is existing looking for validation as opposed to information and education, that seems to be a challenge to get to that person.
Well, no doubt that it is, and I certainly don't want to claim that just because you have a college degree, you're immune from this kind of thinking. We know that that's not true. But what I will say is that psychologists have identified what we now call confirmation bias. We are all actually programmed to be inclined to accept views that reinforce what we already think, and to reject views that challenge what we already think. That's kind of hardwired into the way our minds work. As I said, I think that phenomenon has been exacerbated in recent years, which means that we need to be even more careful about how we counter it. And we counter it, again, by looking for evidence and making sure that that evidence is relevant and that it comes from reliable sources and that we haven't overlooked evidence that would challenge our thinking. And those are the very kinds of skills that college is supposed to be teaching students, and I think generally does. I just think we haven't done it as rigorously, as consistently, and as explicitly as we could be.
Let's build a foundation. What are a couple of the key elements of what would be considered critical thinking? I mean, you're talking about sourcing, but then again, you have someone who hears someone on the news channel, a host, or someone in Congress even, or someone in academia. Well, those are people in authority seats, and they're saying something. It might be I'm not exaggerating here, Jewish space lasers starting California fires, but if someone in Congress is saying it, well, something about it must be true.
Right. So let me say, from my perspective, I think there are basically four key critical thinking skills. And this is a matter of much debate within the academic community. That is to say, there's a whole literature on critical thinking and what it consists of, and lots of people with different definitions. For my purpose, based on my experience as a college professor and advisor for almost 40 years, I've tried to boil it down in the book to basically four. And I think they're exploring context, considering alternatives, weighing evidence, and investigating implications and new applications of things we know. When students are exposed to those four basic kinds of skills, and they look different in different kinds of disciplines, to be sure, it's not the same in chemistry as it is in history, but those basic elements are present, I think, throughout the curriculum and throughout the things that students will learn in a college career. And what I would say then is, when someone makes some outrageous claim, what we want to be doing is asking them, insisting that they provide us the evidence. What evidence do you have that this is the case? And they have to produce evidence. I mean, the most recent cases, of course, that involved issues of supposed voter fraud and stolen election and so forth, ended up in court. And in court, you have to provide evidence to support your point of view. You can't just sound off and, you know, go on a podcast or make pronouncements and walk away. And those claims did not hold up in court overwhelmingly, and that's where we landed. So the point I'm making is that in the context of academic life, professors are required and expected to be able to back up the things that they say, and they teach their students to do the same thing. That's what we need to be doing more consistently and pervasively, both in college and in secondary education, and in the media, where we ought to be holding people accountable for the things that they say when there's no real evidence to back them up.
Dr. Lewis Newman, his book, Thinking Critically in College, The Essential Handbook for Student Success, thinkingcritically.us, is where you can find out more, because this does bring to attention a significant void in, as anyone on social media has certainly seen. And, you know, with that in mind, too, Doctor, when you ask for proof, when you challenge the claim, how do you deal with someone who simply will dismiss you by saying, well, everyone knows, or it's out there, go look it up yourself?
Well, I think the answer to that is pretty simple. The answer to that is we have to have rational discourse to make decisions in our society. You wouldn't want your doctor to be just sort of saying, well, there's no real evidence this drug works, but I'm just going to give it to you anyway because, you know, it feels good to me to be prescribing something, and maybe it'll even harm you. I don't even know. I've never looked at it. Right? You wouldn't regard a doctor who did that sort of thing as a person you would want to be seeing. Similarly, we ought to hold other professionals and other people in positions of authority who make decisions to the same sort of standards. And so, fundamentally, you know, name calling is not a substitute for critical thinking. And I will say again, I mean, it's a well-established fact. Daniel Kahneman wrote a whole book, Thinking Fast and Slow, in which he provides voluminous evidence about the ways in which, as a species, we have sort of evolved to think quickly, to take shortcuts, to be sort of inclined to draw inferences very quickly from bits of information. To think critically is a slow, methodical, and you know, systematic way of looking at information and drawing conclusions and examining something from all sides. And that's time consuming. And in the world in which we live, we're not only evolutionarily inclined to go quickly, but the internet and social media sort of propels us over and over again to look at things quickly, to draw conclusions quickly, to jump from one piece of information to another, and so on. So I think that we're paddling upstream, right? When we promote critical thinking, we're asking people to do something that's hard, that's not going to come easily, it's not going to come naturally necessarily. That's why it takes many years of training, and that's why even after you get a college degree, you need to keep practicing these skills throughout your life as you encounter other situations where they're called for.
So is it as, I don't know if simple is the right phrase to use, but is it just as far as the educators are concerned and what their obligations are, it's to develop a stronger analytical capability in the students to overshadow their emotional preferences or desires that they apply to current events, to news, to people around them, et cetera?
Well, I think that's right in some fashion. And this becomes, of course, especially important when the issues are very controversial, right? And when there's a great deal of emotional investment in a particular point of view, obviously, most recently around issues of race, around issues of gender, and so on. So what I would say is that the responsibility of professors in classrooms, of teachers in general, is to say to students, of course you have strong feelings about this. What we need to do is also look at what evidence is there to support the particular point of view that you're emotionally attached to. And one of the key elements, I talk about this in the book, one of the key elements of an education is that it's sometimes uncomfortable because it sometimes forces us to say, well, you know, that's what my parents taught me, that's what my community believes, that's what I assume, that's what's always that's the position that's comfortable. But actually, now that I am presented with evidence and arguments, I have to reconsider. I have to be willing to have an open mind, which is one of the key components of being able to think critically. We need to be able to look at our own well-established views and be able to subject them to critical thinking. And if we're not doing that really carefully in colleges, then people are going to be ill-equipped to be able to respond to the kinds of challenges you've been talking about.
And certainly for just in day-to-day business world, professional world, personal interactions, it just becomes a powder keg that's or the ticking time bomb, I guess would be the phrase, that it can be diffused. And what Dr. Newman writes about in Thinking Critically in College, the Essential Handbook for Student Success, is the elements of teaching it as well as the practices and the ways to put it into practice for the benefit of all, certainly of self. And if that's not enough of a driving force, then you truly have strayed from the pasture and out there on your own. But to learn more about Thinking Critically in College, the Essential Handbook for Student Success, the website thinkingcritically.us. We'll put the link up on our homepage as well. Dr. Lewis Newman, you're bringing attention to something that so many people, including the educators, think is developed naturally, but well, there's often many cases where it has to be crafted as opposed to created, and your book is going to play a role in that crafting to a greater level of critical thinking. Thank you for your work. Thank you for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.